The tiled entrance was clogged with men. I pushed through and Hubble followed. It was a large, tiled room, square. A strong disinfectant stink. One wall had the doorway. On the left was a row of shower stalls, open. The back wall was a row of toilet cubicles, open at the front, divided by waist-high partitions. The right wall was a row of wash basins, very communal. Not a big deal if you'd been in the army all your life, but Hubble wasn't happy. Not what he was used to at all. All the fittings were steel. Everything that would normally be porcelain was stainless steel, for safety. A smashed-up porcelain wash basin yields some pretty good shards. A decent-sized, sharp piece would make a good weapon. For the same reason, the mirrors over the basins were sheets of polished steel. A bit dull, but fit for the purpose. You could see yourself in them, but you couldn't smash them up and stab somebody with a fragment. I stepped over to a basin and ran cold water. Took a wad of paper towels from the dispenser and soaked them. Held them to my bruised forehead. Hubble stood around doing nothing. I kept the cold towels on for a while and then took some more. Water ran down my face. Felt good. There was no real injury, no flesh there, just skin over solid bone. Not much to injure, and impossible to break. A perfect arch, nature's strongest structure. That's why I avoid hitting anything with my hands. Hands are pretty fragile. All kinds of small bones and tendons in there. A punch big enough to deck that red boy would have smashed my hand up pretty good. I'd have joined him in the hospital. Not much point in that. I patted my face dry and leaned up close to the steel mirror to check out the damage. Not bad. I combed my hair with my fingers. As I leaned against the sink, I could feel the sunglasses in my pocket. The red boy's shades, the spoils of victory. I took them out and put them on, gazed at my dull reflection. As I messed about in front of the steel mirror, I saw the start of some kind of a commotion happening behind me. I heard a brief warning from Hubble and I turned around. The sunglasses dimmed the bright light. Five white guys were trawling across the room. Biker types. Orange suits, of course, more torn-off sleeves, but with black leather additions. Caps, belts, fingerless gloves, big beards. All five were big, heavy men with that hard, slabby fat which is almost muscle, but not quite. All five had crude tattoos on their arms and their faces. Swastikas. On their cheeks, under their eyes, and on their foreheads. The Aryan Brotherhood. White trash prison gang. As the five swept the room, the other occupants melted away. Any who didn't get the message were seized and hustled to the door, thrown out into the corridor. Even the soapy, naked guys from the shower stalls. Within seconds, the big bathroom was empty, except for the five bikers and Hubble and me. The five big men fanned out in a loose arc around us. These were big, ugly guys. The swastika tattoos on their faces were scratched in, roughly inked. My assumption was they'd come to recruit me, somehow hijack the fact that I'd knocked over a red boy, claim my bizarre celebrity for their cause, turn it into a race triumph for the Brotherhood. But I was wrong. My assumption was way out, so I was left unprepared. The guy in the middle of the five was looking back and forth between Hubble and me. His eyes flicked across. They stopped on me.
"Okay, he's the one," he said, looking straight at me.
Two things happened. The end two bikers grabbed Hubble and ran him to the door, and the boss man swung a big fist at my face. I saw it late, dodged left, and it caught me on the shoulder. I was spun around by the blow, grabbed from behind by the neck. Two huge hands at my throat, strangling me. The boss man lined up for another shot at my gut. If it landed, I was a dead man. I knew that much. So I leaned back and kicked out. Smashed the boss man's balls like I was trying to punt a football right out of the stadium. The big Oxford shoe crunched him real good. The welt hit him like a blunt axe. My shoulders were hunched and I was pumping up my neck to resist the strangler. He was wrenching hard. I was losing it. I reached up and broke his little fingers. I heard the knuckles splinter over the roaring in my ears. Then I broke his ring fingers, more splintering, like pulling a chicken apart. He let go. The third guy waded in. He was a solid mountain of lard, sheathed with heavy slabs of meat like armor, nowhere to hit him. He was pounding me with short jabs to the arm and chest. I was jammed back between two sinks, the mountain of lard pressing up, nowhere to hit him, except his eyes. I jammed my thumb into his eye, hooked the tips of my fingers in his ear, and squeezed. My thumbnail popped his eyeball sideways. I pushed my thumb in. His eyeball was nearly out. He was screaming and pulling on my wrist. I held on. The boss man was up on one knee. I kicked hard at his face, missed, caught him in the throat instead, smashed his voice box. He went back down. I went for the big guy's other eye, missed. I held on with my thumb like pushing it through a bloody steak. He went down. I spun away from the wall. The guy with the broken fingers ran for the door. The guy with the eye out was flopping about on the floor, screaming. The boss man was choking on his smashed voice box. I was grabbed from behind again. I twisted away. A red boy. Two of them. I was dizzy. I was going to lose it now. But they just grabbed me and ran me to the door. Sirens were going off. "Get out of here, man!" screamed the red boys over the sirens. "This is ours! We did this! Understand? Red boy did this! We'll take the fall, man!" They hurled me into the crowd outside. I understood. They were going to say they did it, not because they wanted to protect me from the blame, because they wanted to claim the credit, a race victory. I saw Hubble bouncing around in the crowd. I saw guards. I saw hundreds of men. I saw Spivey. I grabbed Hubble and we hustled back to the cell. Sirens were blasting, guards were tumbling out of a door. I could see shotguns and clubs. Boots clattered, shouting and screaming. Sirens. We raced to the cell, fell inside. I was dizzy and panting. I had taken a battering. The sirens were deafening. Couldn't talk. I splashed water on my face. The sunglasses were gone, must have fallen off. I heard screaming at the door. I turned and saw Spivey. He was screaming at us to get out. He rushed into the cell. I grabbed my coat from the bunk. Spivey seized Hubble by the elbow. Then he grabbed me and straight-armed both of us out of there. He was screaming at us to run. Sirens were blasting. He ran us to the emergency door where the guards had rushed out, shoved us through and ran us upstairs, up and up. My lungs were giving out. There was a door at the top of the last flight painted with a big figure 6. We crashed through. He hustled us down a row of cells, shoved us into an empty cell and flung the iron gate shut. It crashed and locked. He ran off. I collapsed on the bed, eyes tight shut. When I opened them again, Hubble was sitting on a bed looking over at me. We were in a big cell, probably twice as wide as the last one. Two separate beds, one on each side. A sink, a john, a wall of bars. Everything was brighter and cleaner. It was very quiet. The air smelled better. This was the holding floor. This was floor 6. This was where we should have been all the time. "What the hell happened to you in there?" Hubble asked. I just shrugged at him. A meal cart appeared outside our cell. It was dragged by an old white guy. Not a guard, some kind of an orderly. Looked more like an old steward on an ocean liner. He passed a tray through an oblong slot in the bars. Covered plates, paper cups, thermos. We ate the food sitting on our beds. I drank all the coffee. Then I paced the cell. Shook the gate. It was locked. The 6th floor was calm and quiet. A big, clean cell. Separate beds. A mirror. Towels. I felt much better up here. Hubble piled the meal debris on the tray and shoved it out under the gate into the corridor. He lay down on his bed, put his hands behind his head, stared at the ceiling. Doing time. I did the same. But I was thinking hard, because they had definitely gone through a selection process. They had looked us both over very carefully and chosen me. Quite definitely chosen me. Then they had tried to strangle me. They would have killed me, except for one thing. The guy with his hands around my throat had made a mistake.
He had me from behind, which was in his favor, and he was big enough and strong enough, but he hadn't balled up his fingers. The best way is to use the thumbs on the back of the neck, but fold up the fingers. Do it with knuckle pressure, not finger pressure. The guy had left his fingers out straight, so I had been able to reach up and snap them off. His mistake had saved my life. No doubt about that. Soon as he was neutralized, it was 2-1. And I've never had a problem with those kind of odds. But it was still a straightforward attempt to kill me. They came in, chose me, tried to kill me. And Spivey had just happened to be outside the bathroom. He had set it up. He had employed the Aryan Brotherhood to kill me. He had ordered the attack and waited, ready to burst in and find me dead. And he had planned it yesterday before 10 p.m. That was clear. That's why he had left us on the wrong floor. On the 3rd, not the 6th. On a convict floor, not the holding floor. Everybody had known we should have been on the holding floor. The 2 guards last night in the reception bunker, they had been totally clear about it. It had said so on their battered clipboard. But at 10:00, Spivey had left us on the 3rd floor, where he knew he could have me killed. He'd told the Aryans to attack me at 12:00 the next day. He had been waiting outside that bathroom at 12:00, ready to burst in, ready to see my body lying on the tiles. But then his plan had fouled up. I wasn't killed. The Aryans were beaten off. The Red Boys had piled in to seize the moment. Mayhem had broken out. A riot was starting. Spivey was panicking. He hit the alarms and called the crash squads, rushed us off the floor up to the 6th, and left us up here. According to all the paperwork, the 6th floor is where we'd been all the time. A neat fallback. It made me fireproof as far as investigation went. Spivey had chosen the fallback option, which said we were never there. He had a couple of serious injuries on his hands, probably even a dead guy. I figured the boss man must have choked to death. Spivey must know I had done it, but he could never say so now, because according to him, I was never there. I lay on the bed and stared at the concrete ceiling. I exhaled gently. The plan was clear. No doubt about Spivey's plan at all. The fallback was coherent, an aborted plan with a neat fallback position. But why? I didn't understand it. Let's say the strangler had balled up his fingers. They would have got me then. I would have been dead, dumped on the bathroom floor with my big, swollen tongue sticking out. Spivey would have rushed in and found me. Why? What was Spivey's angle? What did he have against me? I'd never seen him before. Never been anywhere near him or his damn prison. Why the hell should he operate an elaborate plan to get me dead? I couldn't begin to figure it out. Chapter 8. Hubble slept for a while on the cot across from mine. Then he stirred and woke up, writhed around, looked disoriented for a moment until he remembered where he was, tried to check the time on his watch, but saw only a band of pale skin where the heavy Rolex had been, pushed against the bridge of his nose and remembered he'd lost his eyeglasses, sighed and flopped his head back onto the striped prison pillow. One very miserable guy. I could understand his fear, but he also looked defeated, like he'd just rolled the dice and lost. Like he'd been counting on something to happen, and it hadn't happened, so now he was back in despair. Then I began to understand that, too. The dead guy was trying to help you, wasn't he? I said. The question scared him. I can't tell you that, can I? He answered. I need to know, I said. Maybe you approached the guy for help. Maybe you talked to him. Maybe that's why he got killed. Maybe it looks like now you'll start talking to me, which could get me killed, too. Hubble nodded and rocked back and forth on his bed, took a deep breath, looked straight at me. He was an investigator, he said. I brought him down here because I want this whole thing stopped. I don't want to be involved anymore. I'm not a criminal. I'm scared to death and I want out. He was going to get me out and take down the scam, but he slipped up somehow. And now he's dead. And I'm never going to get out. And if they find out it was me brought him down here, they'll kill me. And if they don't kill me, I'll probably go to jail for 1,000 years anyway, because right now the whole damn thing is very exposed and very dangerous. Who was the guy? I asked him. He didn't have a name, Hubble said. Just a contact code. He said it was safer that way. I can't believe they got him. He seemed like a capable guy to me. Tell the truth, you remind me of him. You seem like a capable guy to me, too. What was he doing up there at the warehouse? I asked him. He shrugged and shook his head. I don't understand that situation, he said. I put him together with another guy, and he was meeting with him up there, but wouldn't they have shot the other guy as well? I don't understand why they only got one of them. Who was the other guy he was meeting with? I said. He stopped and shook his head. I've told you way too much already, he said. I must be crazy. They'll kill me. Who's on the inside of this thing? I asked him. Don't you listen? He said. I'm not saying another word. I don't want names, I said. Is it a big deal? It's huge, he said. Biggest thing you ever heard of. How many people? I said. He shrugged and thought about it, counted up in his head.